This is Screen Divers. In this week's episode, we are talking about 2002 Tiptoes, directed by Matthew Bright, written by Matthew Bright, and starring Gary Oldman, Kate Beckinsale, Patricia Arquette, Matthew McConaughey, Peter Dinklage, and a lot of other unfortunate actors. Cinematography by Sonia Rom, edited by Paul Hyman, music by Kurt Sobel, and produced by Studio Canal Plus. This was distributed by Reality Check Productions, and it was released on December the 17th, 2002. Allegedly, this movie had an original director's cut of 150 minutes, released in 2002, and subsequently released again in 2004 with a 90 minutes running time. Allegedly, this was made for $1.2 million. How are you guys?
I could be better after watching this movie last night.
I watched this much earlier in the week and I'm still suffering.
So we got to keep this episode short.
Yes. We picked this movie as a palate cleanser after a proper piece of cinema last week. This was my pick. But it's a provisional pick because I got to pick next week's movie as well. This doesn't count. We had to cover this. You guys know we had to cover this. So a quintessential question must be asked. Ricky, what's this movie about?
The grounds have opened. Hellfire comes out and up comes this film lofted upon a pillowcase for us to feel very, very awful after.
Fine. Fine. But you want to tell our listeners what this movie is about?
Some guy is coming from a very alternative family in terms of physical differences and is face to face with an issue where he may be introducing another child into this world with physical differences, and it's the cat and mouse, will they, won't they, over abortion.
Okay, in order for us to be cancelled...
Wait, hold on. Wait. Okay, listen.
Are we going to spend the episode tiptoeing around?
You're worried about, oh no, are we going to be cancelled for saying this or that? We watched Tiptoes, man. Tiptoes.
That's what
of
I'm
course
saying,
we're going to be cancelled.
Are we going to spend the rest of the episode going, you can't say that. You can't say that.
Don't talk about abortion,
You're going to piss a lot of people off if you say that. Do you remember Matthew McConaughey saying that? You can't say that.
Dwarf, say the word. Dwarf.
Mate, I told Steve before he left this house yesterday, I said, my face hurts. And it's not because, you know that feeling when you go and see a movie that either you laugh too much or you were in total wonderment and your face kind of hurts because you're kind of smiling subconsciously. You're not realizing you're doing it, but you're doing it. And in this instance, I was perplexed. For the 90 minutes this movie ran, I was so perplexed. I had this look on my face to a point that the girls were watching it with us. Mari and Anna were watching it with us. And Mari, Steve's partner.
You put them through it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Even and after Mari, I told you how bad this was.
I'm hell-bent on ruining burning the ground around me. I got to tell you, you know, there's a, like I told Steve yesterday, there's a gif. There's like a black dude. It was a meme, and it was this black dude looking perplexed, looking at the camera, and there's all these question marks popping up in the gif. That was my face for 90 minutes.
I think it was both our faces for
90 minutes. And I had that head tilt that dogs do when they...
Yeah.
But, Steve, am I bullshitting here?
Like... No. Not at all.
To give a proper what this film's about, you know what? IMDb has got the perfect one-liner. The story of a peculiar love triangle involving two brothers. There we go.
And after watching this movie, you have to appreciate the little things.
This is the synopsis from Wiki, right? Tiptoes is a 2002 American comedy drama film written and directed by Matthew Bright. The film stars Gary Oldman, Kate Beckinsale, Patricia Arquette, Matthew McConaughey. The film plot revolves around an average-sized man, McConaughey. What the fuck? Who wrote this, mate? Like,
Anybody.
Can someone check how tall McConaughey is, please?
He's the average-sized man.
But what's average size? I need to know what's... Well,
more than Gary Oldman in this film.
Well, he's on his fucking knees, mate. Oh, although he should have been on his fucking knees with his agent when he was offered this.
Well, did you see the picture I sent you guys when I first was watching this? Did you see the weird green screen around his knee?
We all saw it.
If there's ever an auction... where they auction the fake set of legs that they've used in every one of the shots in this, I want those little legs. I would buy this. Like, dude, oh, look what I got. I got Gary Oldman's legs from fucking Tiptoes.
Just to put him on the couch.
Mate, it was Steve. It was Steve. He was like fucking Leonardo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Every time he's so fucking... He saw Gary Oldman's legs. Steve's going, whoa.
Rewind it. Look, you can see his legs.
Oh, so and it was Steve this time. It was Steve this time saying, rewind.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. You can see his legs. Where?
Did you start doing a Harrison Ford?
Enhanced 224 to 176. Enhanced. Stop. Move in. Stop. Pull out track right. Stop. Center and pull back. Stop.
Rewind it. Look, you can see his legs.
45 right. Stop. Center and stop.
Holy shit, mate.
This film, okay, so I know a lot about this film. I've done a disturbing amount of research for a film that I am going to be scoring relatively quite badly. But I've done 7 hours worth of listening to different podcasts on this film.
Before you get into all the factoids that you have gathered on your harvesting mission, I will promise our listeners to release in the comments, all right, in the comments, because this show has no show notes. We made a path here not to have show notes, all right? It's impractical, but fuck it. That's what you get for nothing, all right? I'll tell you what, once we set up the Patreon and you start giving us the equivalent of a cup of coffee a month to listen to this disjointed, janky podcast, then you get the right to get your show notes. Only then. But until then, if I make a promise like this, it's gold, all right? This is gold dust. I will put in the comments to the post when we release this episode, when it's out, to go to our social media, go to Facebook. I will share with you the screenshot of my attempt to pull out of this and being funny at the same time. Ricky was the first person to watch it. We waited 24 hours, and then I sent a message to Ricky going, "How bad is it?" He goes, "It's pretty bad, man. It's pretty bad." And I went, I waited like 10 minutes and then I went, "We pranked you." And his reply was, he was on fire. He wasn't happy. He was like, "I have watched this. You are watching this and we are not watching anything else for the next podcast." So
I have the message. So Umbar said, "So bad it's good. Tiptoes." And I wrote, "Fuck no." And then he did a smiley face and I said, "There is a lot to talk about, but fuck no, it's not good in any way. You will have to watch it and we will talk about it because you, sir, put it on the schedule." And then he wrote, "We pranked you." And I said, "I am not watching any other movie and you have to watch this film." We pranked you.
Why do I sound like some weird fucking Dr. Evil in your messages?
"We prank you." Oh, and it is followed by "suck my balls."
With a Z. There's a Z at the end there. It ends with a Z. Balls.
My balls. Yes.
Man, you know, I talked about the principal cast of this movie, but one of the pleasant notes, it was, I mean, it's all bad, right? But we also chuckled a few times. you know, I'm under perplexity. We laughed several times, but one of the things that kind of gave me joy was to see a lot of, you know, small, what term are we going to use that is politically
little
correct
people.
Here? Little people.
Little people.
Little people.
We saw a lot of like really seminal actors, character actors that showed up. There's actors from Seinfeld here, recurring actors on Seinfeld. There's the little person that played the dwarf in the dream sequences in Twin Peaks, mm-hmm. legendary. Peter Dinklage is in this, and I gotta tell you, his entire French Marxist shtick is just... Mm.
did you guys find out why he's a French Marxist in this?
No.
I did.
Tell us.
Okay, well, let me just start off with this. This film was 20-odd years in the making. Yeah. And what I mean by that was that Matthew Bright wrote this when he was still in high school. He comes from a very good friendship background. He's friends with Jeff Bridges. He was part of the original Knights of Oingo Boingo and also did a lot of performances with both Elfmans. He is in the Forbidden Zone. He is actually very, very well-liked amongst the Hollywood community.
He's also the director of Freeway, dude. Which
yes, he
is. Yeah.
Yeah, and Freeway 2, I believe. I think Freeway 2 was him as well.
I'm not totally sure. I don't know if I've
seen it. But I'm not sure, but I don't want to put my money on it. But
for our listeners, just in case you don't remember Freeway, that was 1996. Kiefer Sutherland was on fire. Reese Witherspoon. It's maybe one of these days we'll revisit it. I don't particularly remember it, but I remember that it was one of those movies that came out post-Pulp Fiction. There's a lot of movies that had that kind of vein running through it.
And this is also another one of those films that has come from all of that because it was actually optioned in the 80s. So it was optioned and he was receiving money because it got optioned. Nobody did anything with it and it got optioned every single year. So he kept making money, like a small amount, but a good enough money to live off for a bit because it kept getting optioned. And then finally, somebody put it in the hands of Gary Oldman and they said, we're going to go with it. We're optioning it this year. We haven't got a director. Do you want to direct it? And then he met the producers. And the producers are the same producers from Cops. So they've got loads of money.
Let me guess. In all the podcasts you listen to, in all the research you've done, this must have been a producer's disaster, right? This is people meddling.
Yes.
Because this movie is a tonal disaster.
Yeah.
Because of the way it's edited. I'm not saying that, I'm not interested in that. If you can even get it, I don't think you can get the 150-minute version. I would be curious to watch that.
Because it doesn't exist.
But the thing is, you can see that this was destroyed by editing. Mm-hmm. And you can see some of the choices with the music in this.
Oh, my God.
Holy shit, mate. The tonal change of some of the music they put over some sequences.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
It feels like a horror movie.
We kept thinking, don't hand in the baby now because he's gonna step on it. Yeah, or it looked like it brought me back to McConaughey and the way he acted in Frailty, or Killer Joe, because of the music. It's so misplaced, and I have the firm belief that Matthew Bright really got fucked over here. He must have. Apparently, they took his writing credit out, so he's got a director's credit, but they. Because the movie's been rewritten. Steve, have you got anything on this?
Yeah, he actually renamed his writing credit. He also tried to get his director's credit removed as well. Changed it to, oh my God, you're going to love this, to Bill Wiener.
Is that a real person?
Yeah. No, he just is an alias.
Okay.
He used an alias for his screenwriter.
Of course he would.
Yeah. But he was unable to remove his director's credit because he wasn't a member of a director's guild.
Yeah. I mean, the 90-minute cut, the theatrical cut, I don't think this movie got a theatrical release. It didn't. Apparently, it was released at Sundance, but it's called a 90-minute producer's cut, and you can fucking see mm-hmm. that. These are people that don't know anything about this medium. This is like venture capitalism at its finest. I think Matthew Bright went out of her way, of his way, with his context probably to involve a lot of, we got a lot of fucking superstars at the top of their game here, man. 2002, you had Underworld in production. Kate Beckinsale was becoming, you know, and she's pretty as hell in this. But fuck, man, some of the wardrobe choices, she looks like a Bratz doll, you know, Bratz, you know, that line of dolls.
Yeah.
Oh. It looks like someone put all of the Spice Girls in a fucking blender and hit the button. It's really ridiculous.
That's actually the sticking point around this film, because John Langley and Margaret Langley, who are the Cops producers, they had a meeting and they said, we want this made on the lowest budget ever. Great, whatever. So Matthew Bright pulled in as much as possible. Everybody got paid at SAG minimum and everybody was happy with it.
And yeah, because it's a vanity project, right? They wanted to be in a movie by Matthew Bright.
Yeah, probably. Well, it was more that like everyone actually liked the script. They thought the script was worthwhile. The original script, whatever that was.
And you said it though, the original script. And you know what? This is an original script. Mm. It's extremely original. And at one point, I turned around to Steve while we're watching this, and I went, "Dude, this feels like they were attempting Oscar bait." The producers must have thought, "It's gonna pull out the heartstrings."
Well. The thing is, yes, that's what the producers wanted, but this is a very personal script to Matthew Bright, because one of his best friends and one of his roommates is a very famous little person. We'll talk more about that in a second.
Okay.
My point was that because they wanted to do this on such a micro budget, he was pulling strings everywhere, and everyone's like, yep, we'll do it for SAG minimum, that's fine. And Kate Beckinsale said, yep, I'll do it for SAG minimum, I just want to wear my lucky hat.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yep. Can you guess which is her lucky hat?
It's the pixie. It's the raving pixie girl.
Mm-hmm.
Off her
it's
face.
It's the weird, bobbly-haired, totally misplaced gnome hat that she's wearing. And on the first day of shooting, that was what they shot. Margaret Langley turned up and said, "What's that on her head?" And he was like, "She wants to wear the hat. She is working for SAG minimum, and all she wanted to do was wear her hat. Let her wear a hat. You are not a director. You are not a writer. You're a producer. Learn your place. She's wearing the hat." And that was the moment this film actually imploded.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. And that person, Margaret Langley, was the one who took the director's cut, edited it herself, and purposely picked all the shots opposite to Matthew Bright's shots. So if Matthew Bright wanted a specific shot, she was like, "No, I'm going to go for the opposite one."
Yeah,
and that's what's
been released. What do we call this? It's a spite edit.
Yeah,
fucking shots.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
this movie's like, it's so disjointed and weird, and some of the sequences are so fucking out there, dude. Like, it's not just that the movie's impolitically correct. I mean, we'd be shorting us.
By the way, I know what this sounds like, but I'm shorting myself. No.
Another thing as well, at one point I said, because it was so confusing that you could easily think, okay, this is terrible acting, but it's not. It's the writing. It was the girls in the room. It was Mari and Anna said it as well. When I said it, they said, no, their delivery is great. It's the lines they're given that are just fucking awful.
Mm.
Like the entire conversation about her repeating midget 3 times throughout that exchange. Yeah. It's so fucking funny. It's inappropriate. And I thought, is this for real, mate? Because it looks like it's a redub. It looks like it's been, that someone's taken the piss. And you know those social media redubs that you see? It's like, this can't be a movie. This cannot. At some point, someone must have put their hand up going, don't do that. Don't do this. Or is this like an outtake? And also, how the fuck did they keep a straight face? Well, they kept a straight face because the original edit probably had parts of dialogue that made everything much more sensical. But this entire sequences of this, they come out of nowhere. And even some of the camera angles are kind of weird, mate. There's a bit where, let's call her little Gwen. I'm just sipping on chamomile, watching boys and girls in the sex appeal. With a stranger in my face who says he knows my mom and went to my high school. All the boys say, hey, baby, hey, baby, hey. Girls say, hey, baby, hey, baby, hey. Hey, baby, baby. Hey, baby, hey, baby, hey. Boys say, boys say. Hey, baby, hey, baby, hey. All the boys get the girls in the back.
Are you talking about Bridget Powers?
Mate, I kept thinking of Gwen Stefani.
You were thinking of Gwen Stefani, yeah.
I had a little doubt, but I just, and it's a porno now. It's a porno. It's a fucking porno, dude. And it's...
Well, that's what her actress is.
She's a porn star?
Yeah. So what's great, when you look at her IMDb, okay?
You didn't know that, Ricky,
no,
right?
But this is the funny...
you fucking knew right away, mate.
No. The funny thing is, I was having a look
at
her IMDb.
I don't
want to
get into this, mate.
You got it. Well, before, I put her into IMDb, and I was scrolling down, and it's like, okay, she was in SWAT. She was also in a few other, The League, Wrist Cutters, A Love Story. That's actually quite a funny film. I've seen that. And then I was like, before Tiptoes was Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, fine, whatever. And then I started going down right to the bottom of her list. And then I read Up. Okay, I didn't know IMDb had porn films as well, but here we go. Only the A-hole 7, More Dirty Debutantes 103, Bridget P.I. I hope that is a porno, but who knows. Hot Bods and Tailpipes number 7, Creme de la Face 37, Power to the Penis, Bridget the Midget Gangbang, 18 Inches versus 18 Inches, Brides of the Countless Rectal, Cocksmokers 15, New Wave Hookers 6, Whack Attack 8, Straight Up Their Candy Asses, Goo Gallery, Las Vegas Revenue 2000, I think that's a porno, I don't know. Midgets Go to Hollywood. Double Midgetation. I think that's my favorite one. Double Midgetation. I love that one. And
don't forget Pussy Wars.
Oh, Pussy Wars. Pussy Wars.
Whispers in the Wind. To each his own, put it where it doesn't belong. My pipes need cleaning. All tit fucking volume 8. I need your cock. Ass worshipping rim jobbers. My cut in 8 shafts. Come clean. Come gargling naked sluts. Come buns 3. Coming in socks. Come on Eileen. Huge black cocks with pearly white cum. Girls who crave cock. Girls who crave cunt. Met alone 2, the KY connection. Pink pussy lips. Oh yeah, and all holes filled with hard cock.
But yeah, so I didn't realize IMDb actually has porno flicks on. Oh, I'm gonna have a time of my life from now
please
on.
Please destroy your fucking algorithm.
She's also the little person who cheats on Gary Oldman as well. So
twice.
twice.
Well, yes, that's what her role is in this, but it's the sequence when she cheats on him the second time. When she cheats on him the second time, she's fucking. She's being fucked on a table by the guy that is meant to be a parody of Sammy Davis Jr. Mm-hmm. Like, it's what the fuck's going on? And that entire sequence is so fucking weird and uncomfortable, I might say. But the opening of this movie starts at a charity fund that is put on by Matthew McConaughey's character. What's his name in the movie? He plays Steven.
Steven
Bedalia. There you go. It's an Italian. It's a little Italian family, all right? Southern Italian family. Southern as in southern, like from a southern state. Because actually Gary Oldman is trying to put on a southern draw in this as well.
From down below.
But Bedalia is a southern Italian surname as well. So it's somehow a little Italian family. The guy that plays the uncle is a very charming man, by the way. A very charming actor. I don't recall seeing him in other stuff other than Seinfeld. He appears in a few of the episodes with Kramer and all the storylines. And even his wife, which is his auntie, she's really cool. The other blonde, not Gwen Stefani.
Debbie Lee Carrington, Kitty Katz.
Yeah, I think it's her. And she's great.
The one who ends up with his uncle. They're not together at the start.
Oh, they're not together. Okay.
She's royalty. She has been in.
She's a pretty famous character actor. Like, you're seeing her a lot of stuff. I don't know if she's still alive.
I'm gonna say that she's not.
She died in 2018.
She died when?
2018.
Oh, right. It is highlighted in this film as well that, you know, little people can have a genetic disorder that will eventually lead to a shorter lifespan, right? And that's the entire subplot of this movie.
She was really good in Total Recall.
John Polito. She was in Total Recall. Yeah, she was great. It's a shame because the more we talk about this movie, you know, I was ready to come here and trash it. But there's something there. And, I mean, Gary Oldman actually... kind of stole a couple of scenes in this. He can act in anything, you know? Like, at one point I fantasized about an alternate reality, like Interdimensional Cable, where we got a rerun of a different Batman movie where Commissioner Gordon was very, very short. But because he's got the same mustache, right? He's got the same mustache. And his face is full of prosthetics because he's meant to be a twin brother to Steven, right? To Matthew McConaughey. And they did that kind of reasonably well, but it's weird because of the juxtaposition of him being on his knees all the way through this. It's fucking weird, man. Even the entire... that's why they gave him a hunch, I think. Because obviously your body, the balance, it would be difficult to act without it. So it would kind of... I wonder if that was Gary Oldman's idea. To go, I need something else.
I can go into that a little bit. Basically, to reduce the amount of arm length on scenes, they've hunched him up at the back.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like his arms are within, the standard metrics. Obviously, they don't quite. I've seen a couple of clips where he's talking about how he was create the hand movements and gestures for that size and shape. And it's kind of interesting that he really did go into that.
Oh, it's Gary Oldman.
Yeah, we're talking about, we've got three Oscar winners in this cast. What we got was an abortion of a movie compared to what we should have got. I had to say that.
Well, we have an abortion in the movie, but it's an abortion of a movie.
There's a possible abortion. So we were talking about Oscar winners. Is Peter Dinklage an Oscar winner or not?
Gary Oldman, Matthew McConaughey, and Patricia Arquette.
Yeah, because I know that he went up for an Oscar for The Station Agent, didn't he?
Yeah.
But so why is he French and why is he a communist? Matthew Bright's roommate, even at a young age, at 17, 18, was Hervé Villechaize. If you don't know who Hervé Villechaize is, he is Knick Knack in The Man with the Golden Gun.
Oh, wow.
And he is also Tattoo on Fantasy Island. The plane!
The plane, senor, the plane!
Yeah, the plane. So, Hervé Villechaize.
He also had a massive monster. Oh, you're right, because he was addicted to cocaine and whores, mm-hmm. man. Yeah. That's how he died. A massive fucking heart attack, right?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Suicide, dude.
Suicide. It was suicide. I think it was suicide. Because it was after, there's a film biopic, which Peter Dinklage plays Hervé Villechaize, where it's his last interview. And Sergei, I can't remember his surname, but he's the one who directed the film. And he was the one who interviewed Hervé Villechaize, and he then killed himself 3 or 4 days later.
Yeah, I saw a documentary about it. I think this is what you're talking about. But he was a tortured soul.
Yes.
I loved him when I was a kid, dude, because Fantasy Island, I used to watch reruns on television. And
he's so memorable as Knick Knack. There's, you know, it's that iconic,
it's dark
image.
His story is fucking dark. Mm. I had no idea, dude. I had no idea that that's what he was doing in this.
Yeah. So that is why Peter Dinklage is French and a communist.
And a cantankerous.
Yeah, because he is basically Hervé Villechaize. This script was written as a bit of an homage.
It is, because the relationship with Patricia Arquette and the disintegration of it, which we get a taste of, it's kind of brushed over, but it resembles that because he was having like hardcore problems in his marriage. Yeah.
Oh, and I've got to say, I can't take credit for all of this. This is coming from a lot of this like 5-series podcast that I found. And it's like, it is on Spotify, but I had to dredge it out of lots of little things. It's called Trip Toes, and it's by these guys called Nick and Lex. And I don't think they've done much since, but this is like
comprehensive.
The body. Very comprehensive.
Nice.
The only thing I would also add to that is, regardless of all of this, regardless of us not knowing what the film was meant to be, what is left is devastatingly awful. There's some people out there who kind of say like, oh, it's so bad, it's good. No, the experience of this is 90 minutes of there's nothing going on. This is,
however,
what it is.
You could argue that it could easily fall in the category of so bad, it's good. Because The Room nails that without meaning to, right? Here, this is more of a proper disaster film. You could have a little bit of a kink, you know, and this would be, I bet you that this would be like a group watch for a lot of people, right? The problem is that it handles a subject matter that is a delicate subject matter, and it's offensive. The movie is highly offensive, and the edit is offensive. The execution is offensive because of the edit. It's hard to take it as a parody of itself. You can laugh at it, but you feel bad every time you do. That's the thing. You don't feel bad when you laugh at The Room. But when you laugh at this, I felt like, ugh. Plausibility went out the window at the beginning of this movie. When Kate Beckinsale offers a blowjob, we have kind of his character going, sorry, gotta go. It's not plausible. The entire juxtaposition of any man walking away from such an offer.
Especially the love of their life.
From the love of their life, from the VCR, left unattended, from the cat. It's just doesn't, that's what I'm saying. It's plausibility out the window.
So that is what the first scene in the trailer for this movie.
It's Beckinsale on her knees.
Yeah, on her knees.
Yeah,
like saying,
I watched the trailer and I watched about 3 different trailers and they're all freaking terrible. It does that American Pie thing. It's sold as some quirky comedy, but it's just wrong.
For lovers of wrong. Bridget Powers and her early career. Look, as I said, like, you've actually hit the nail on the head, because like from that scene, I knew that this was going to be terrible. This was going to be a terrible film.
What's going on here?
Yeah, because like even her propositioning him kind of felt really like, what are you doing, woman? You literally just finished painting and now you're like, hey.
You wouldn't question it.
I wouldn't question it. No, but like
you would go, maybe after.
Yeah, maybe
the next day. What was going on there?
I just wanted to mark your balls with the paint I was using. So I thought that was the easiest way to do it. It's like, mark.
I don't know, mate.
Just going to say this. The believability was out the window as soon as she was painting, because there's no paint on the brush.
That's fucking true as well. There's no paint on the brush.
that's what this film is full of. Like, you know the bit where she's like saying, oh, I've been spending time with your brother and I've got to meet your family. And then he's on the phone in the dark where he's doing his job, throws his phone away and then says to a random woman that I know he works with her, but says to a random woman, do you want to go to a party? And then that goes nowhere. That goes absolutely nowhere.
There was a lot of times that I chuckled because it, I don't know, saw something that reflected a past memory or whatever, or made me think of it. It's the bit when Peter Dinklage wakes up again in the hotel room, and it's a sweet moment between them. This is right before he falls for her, basically, because it took her beating the manager of the little fucking motel with a shoe for him to fall in love. And even the way he's handling that gun, but it's like, tonally, this movie is a disaster. It's like he's ready for action. All of a sudden, it's a fucking action movie. What is this? What is it? Because that's a touch of freeway in this. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, that's what that entire sequence resembled, freeway, for me. But anyway, he wakes up. This is right after he got really high the day before in order to deal with the pain. He allegedly drinks, Steve, what was it? What's his drink of choice?
Raspberry morphine.
I gotta say, it's a great name for a cocktail anyway. He wakes up in the morning. And the moment he opens his eyes, you can see that Patricia Arquette has been placing stones and minerals all over him. It's basically a healing crystal session. That's what that is. I had somebody try to do that to me once. And Anna witnessed this. And Anna witnessed me almost losing my shit with a hippie that was trying to heal me with crystals. It's not a happy memory. It's like you look at, and this guy had, it was in Norway. German dude living in Norway, they spent some time in Australia. We did something, right? So I was even in the state of mind, and all of a sudden he comes out with a fucking didgeridoo. I just dreads, right? German dude with dreads, didgeridoo. He goes, and I'm like, and I just got back from Australia after living in Australia for like over 2 decades, and it's just already irritating the shit out of me, right? You seem very tense. Are you open to a new experience? And I'm like, I looked at Anne and then I looked at the guy and what are you talking about? And he leaves the room, comes back with his little sachet and inside this little sack, there's the crystals and he hands me one. He goes, put it under your armpit. I'm like, okay. I put it under my armpit. Like, put this one under your armpit. I'm like, okay, I'll go along. I'll put it under my armpit. I'm getting increasingly irritated. Then he gives me a larger crystal and he goes, put this under your scrotum.
Like, sorry, put it in your scrotum. You want me to put this in my balls? Mate, I looked at Anne. I went like this. And you could hear the two stones going, bonk, bonk. Gave him the other stone and went outside. Because if I didn't go outside, I would be on the fucking Norwegian paper. I'm telling you, I had to go and stare at a lake until whatever we took wore off.
Did that make you less tense, staring at the lake?
Mate, please.
That means he did his job.
He did the equivalent of anyone going to another person, like a traffic accident or whatever, and saying to the other dude, all right, going, relax. It's the worst fucking thing you can say to someone. And that's what this guy was doing to me. Watching that sequence brought me back there. Really had to shake it off for a moment.
You know what also makes me feel like reviewing more of this film? And
welcome, Mr. Spader.
Hi, how's it going? I hear that you want some 10-star reviews for this one.
Please.
So, it's hardcore fun. Try it out. It's in the past, I've had a few bad exchanges with midgets. They're always angry, which is weird because when they walk, it looks like they're always happy with a tune in their head. But after watching this film, my opinion totally changed. The performances are high and tight. You should try it out. Thank you, Gavin Bell 11316. And this final
when was
review,
this when was this
that
written?
Review was in February 2nd, 2019. The next one is this fantastic review, giving it 10 out of 10. I will say S. Pritchard 40317, October 25th, 2023. Wake up, America. This is a fine American classic. Peter Dinklage is a man. Gary Oldman should stand up. I need Disney to wake up. Stand up.
Gary Oldman should stand up. That's the thing in the business.
And finally do a remake America has wanted and needed and been asking for. I turned to my buddy Mark and Jeff. We decided not to tiptoe, but to have heavy step in being loud and bringing this masterpiece to the streets of Portland. I asked that we get an army of these fellas and hit the streets. I'm looking at all of the little folks that don't have a voice. Amazing movie, 10 out of 10. Thank you, S. Pritchard, 40317.
I'm going to tell you something, man. Before we get to ratings, because actually I want our listeners to go and watch this. They need to. And I think we should recommend this movie, not because it's a good movie. It's unlike anything else you have seen. It would be a point of the conversation with somebody else who has seen it. And also you need to question why this happened. It's unprecedented, I think. There has been loads of bad movies. There are so many bad movies out there, but this is different. This is like the product of something that actually could have been pretty memorable. You just remove the juxtaposition of having like an actor that is not a little person, because you could have had another actor of the caliber of Peter Dinklage playing the brother, and all of a sudden you've got the dramedy. That's one of the elements that's already very jarring. Why would you get, when there are actors that are little people, that are very talented, why the fuck would you get Gary Oldman to do this? Because that was there from the beginning. It wasn't a bad edit. He was offered the role. He went, yes.
As we said before, we don't know what the original script looked like. It's not been revealed to the public. Around 2000s was a actor's strike. And so there was a lot of talk, and it was spearheaded by Susan Sarandon, Bryan Cranston, and Tim Robbins of do not cross the picket lines. So Gary Oldman was in a little bit of a position of, I need a film.
I heard that he actually, money-wise as well, he lives from paycheck to paycheck. It's kind of honorable. At the end of the day, they're just actors. They're amassing a wealth. It's just kind of stupid, right? But he's a great actor, and he lives from paycheck to paycheck. Like, we're talking about fucking Gary Oldman, one of the greats. I dare to say that he adds 30% of what the fuck to this movie. Because of, come on, man, every time he's sitting down, he's acting with a pair of fake legs in front of him, which I want to buy as soon as they go up for auction. I'm wondering if someone bought those. There must be somewhere. You don't throw those away, right?
Man, I kid you not, the amount of movie props would just get thrown in skips.
But not those legs. Yeah. I want those legs, man.
I want the legs.
Because they are the same ones as well. They're the same ones as well. Patricia Arquette. But she plays the Patricia Arquette that she played for like 20 years. Or before Escape at the Namora. Mm. You know, like before that, it was like ditzy kind of. She's a great actor.
what is the point of his role? What is the point? Normally I watch a film and I go, at least I can look at the cinematography. At least I can look at the props. At least I can look at the acting. At least there's nothing about this film that I can look at and be like positive about.
You know the shot? It's a very like Evil Dead-like shot. Steve, oh my God. You remember the shot in question at the Jewish wedding?
Yes, with the shaky cam over the shoulder.
It's like, what is this? The tone, mate. We talked about it earlier, the music. There's like this ominous fucking music during some of the intimate conversations that they're having. One of them, there's one where even some of the blocking in this is super weird. It's also some of the makeup in this was also like, what the fuck are you guys doing? This is a different tone. It's when she gives birth and he's there. He looks like he's just murdered somebody and he looks like he's possessed. And it's like, what the fuck? And then the music is really scary. And I thought, what the fuck is he going to do now? Is he going to kill everybody in the room?
No, Steve said it as well. Punch a wall and be mean to a little person.
He does punch the
doctor.
Wall as well. And it's so fucking weird.
So the guy is generally a music editor or music supervisor. It's Kurt Sobel. And he's done some great movies. I mean, then some really bad ones as well. But he did Ghostbusters Afterlife as a music editor. But Revenant.
Yeah.
He was a music editor.
Dude, of the music at the party, you know, that fucking weird. It was like Fifth Element, future pop. What the fuck is this shit? Super weird. Even Mari said, what's with the music? Like, it's just fucking weird. And then there's the first sequence I chuckled, which is, okay, it's a party. And there's Kate Beckinsale dancing. She's the tallest there. And then he goes out of the way. Steven, played by Matthew McConaughey, he decides to bring his work colleague to the party, who happens to be very fucking tall. And it's fucking weird. But the best, and that's when I laughed, and don't tell me you didn't laugh. Let's go back to the opening, which is the uncle's charity work. He's a esteemed member of the community because he's doing a lot of good and he's raising awareness. And he's not doing it aggressively, right? In fact, there's the entire sequence when he gets challenged by Peter Dinklage's characters, by Maurice, and they argue because their stance is different, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a sequence where you can see that he's at ease. He's acting like he's at ease with his family because he's not. That's the point this movie was making, right? The entire juxtaposition of him hiding his entire family history from his girlfriend is insane, just as it is to refuse that blowjob at the beginning of this movie. But he's dancing. And he's dancing, and it's so fucking weird. Mm-hmm. It is so fucking weird, and it's so funny. And that's why I'm saying that this, as I could see it, if someone told me the Prince Charles is screening Tiptoes, if they're not, it's because they're afraid that there'll be people fucking demonstrating outside, because we live in a time in which that could happen. You know what I mean? But I assume that, I would be curious to know how the Little People community feel about this movie as well. They must find it funny. Because it's so bad, it imploded. It would have been offensive to them probably if it was what it was intended to be. I don't know.
Well, the reason this got a late distribution is because Matthew Bright turned up at Sundance and basically said, you see those producers that didn't want me here? They've ruined this film. This film is garbage. I hate this film. I hate everybody associated. So he actually destroyed a chance for it to get proper distribution. I don't even know if this has hit the cinemas unless it's
it was straight to
art house cinemas or whatever. But it's just they did. The producers destroyed this film. There is, and from my point of view, there is nothing credible of this film because there was no love. Supposedly, the producers then made all the shooting schedules horrible and just made crew and cast cry on a daily basis. It's a terrible, terrible thing to happen to somebody who is just trying to make a movie.
There's a sequence in particular, which some of the acting is so, and I think it's the editing because we're missing scenes, right? When she tells him that she's pregnant, they're in bed. There's an that reaction shot of him is so fucking long, and it's funny. Because it's like it doesn't know what to do. And I guess when you're acting, then in the edit, they'll take out, okay, this is enough, and cut it there, right? But we got the entire thing. We got the entire reaction of him until he gets out of bed, and it's so fucking, it's stupid.
And it's tiny whities.
Yeah. Which, by the way, he's fucking ripped in this. Mm-hmm. And I turned around because it's 2002. if you remember, he goes on in the future. He went on to star in a Christopher Nolan movie, which was Interstellar. And I thought, with that physique, I thought, you betcha, that whenever they were casting for Batman Begins, which I think was 2006, he must have screen tested for it, but yeah. or auditioned for it. And Steve checked quickly. We couldn't find anything about it, but he's got a Batman body in this, man.
It just reminds you of like how much he put his body through, like seeing his physique in 2001, 2002 to Dallas Buyers Club, where, yeah. you know, it's a film about suffering from AIDS and how much his body was completely decimated and he's a walking skeleton in that. And then after that, he did True Detective, so he had to bulk himself up again.
With good direction, he's a phenomenal actor.
He's phenomenal. He is great.
You know, he was around this time, he was in fucking Reign of Fire, dude. So that's another time with Christian Bale, right? So there's connected DNA here. Yeah. I'm telling you, he must have been eyed out to play Batman.
Are you telling me that Christian Bale should have been Gary Oldman in Tiptoes?
Dude, let's go to ratings.
I'm just a dwarf!
Where are they? Where are they?
My French friend needs to know.
What the fuck? Who is the guy that plays the security guard? Who the fuck's that guy?
I'm currently watching 6 Feet Under again, and he's actually a mainstayer, like a secondary character in 6 Feet Under, and he's great in that. He plays an art lecturer who is just on that fringe of like, is he sleeping with his students? Isn't he? It's great. He's really good actor.
He's fucking terrible in this.
He's terrible in
this. He's terrible in this. Like, what the fuck is this? That's when the movie started to remind me of The Room a little bit. Maybe the word production was already from the get-go, and the director already didn't want to fucking be there.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Bright already was like, fucking okay, fuck, that's it, we got it. There's a lot of that. Even Patricia, these are all actors that with good direction are fantastic, but without it, if anything, Kate Beckinsale is really, if it wasn't for the way she's sexualized in this as well, because those outfits, man, the entire choker with it was distracting. What and the fuck hair. Are you doing? I found myself saying, what is she wearing? Who gives a shit? I don't, but in this instance, it's like, what? Where was Marilyn Vance? For new listeners of our show, if you don't know who Marilyn Vance is, we discussed her amazing skill over and over. She's one of the most famous costume designers in Hollywood. Yeah. She was involved in anything from Mystery Man to... We love Marilyn Vance. Mystery Man to Untouchables to great body of work. But where were you, Marilyn?
Yeah, and also her producer work.
Yeah, producer work as well. Yeah, true. Yeah. But obviously she wouldn't have a name attached to Disturbed in any way, shape, or form. I think it's ratings time.
It definitely is ratings time.
Write it down. So I gave this movie a 0. And not to contradict myself, but I did say earlier that I also recommend this movie. I think you should watch it. You either watch it on your own or you watch it with a lot of people. If you're watching it on your own, you're researching for the conversation that at some point will pop up and you're ready for it. Because there's people out there that want to talk about this movie. And we are 3 of those people. All right? So I know you guys jumped into this reluctantly, but at least we ticked that off. I think this is something that people, if you like cinema, if you like film, I think you should watch this. Because there is a didactic quality to what it would make you think about the filmmaking process, right? This was, like we said, a spied edit, just going wrong and producers taking over. You know, as a producer, if you know your place, put the money in, you're betting onto something that will win, because that's what you are. If you're a producer, you put money into something that will yield you more money. And there's a role for that in filmmaking, because otherwise films wouldn't be made. And successful producers know how to play that game well. It's akin to, I don't know, trading in the stock market or whatever. So this makes no sense. That's the, from a producing standpoint, it makes no sense. So, and I think you should witness that. At the same time, it's also mind-boggling, perplexing. And if you want to feel the way we felt when we watched this, you know, you will feel things that you haven't felt before, but perplexity is what you will experience for 90 minutes here, I think. That's the main feeling. It's a 0. It's a 0 what? It's a 0 little legs that I want to buy at an auction somewhere if they're available. And I would pay much more than 0 for them.
Okay, so this is a 1 because we can see that there was possibly a good movie or a movie in there. Tiptoes debuted in its 150-minute director's cut at the Harry Knowles Butnamathon Film Festival in December the 17th of 2002.
Are you putting your fucking factoids in your...
Yeah. And what we got was this producer abortion version where it's, as Umba's saying, this is spike cut. This is somebody basically going, I don't care if we don't make any money out of this. This is basically, I just don't want to ever do this again. And remember, this was a director's last movie. He's never directed a movie after this.
You don't say.
Yeah. And when we look at his previous track record and we look at what films he produced and everything else, there's some gems there. And we can kind of see where he might have been going with this. I'm going to give it a 1-star rating, with the one being a set of legs under a table.
Actual, like Gary Oldman's legs, right?
Gary Oldman's legs. Yeah.
I'm wondering what the knee pads budget was for this fucking movie, man.
Oh, my God.
That must have been painful, like you said, Steve.
Yeah. He wasn't a spry young man anymore.
He's a real stand-up guy.
Normally, I've said it earlier, there's something I can find in a film that I can latch onto and love or even find funny. I hate to say that this was one of those films that has defeated me. I lie at the bottom of this film, reaching up, being like, why, oh, why did I use up 90 minutes of my week, especially this week? All I've got to say about this film is, you think of terrible directors. You think of people like Uwe Boll. You think of people like McGee. They have never made anything as terrible as this. Ed Wood at one point was considered a bad film director. This pretty much makes Plan 9 of Outer Space. Citizen Kane. It does. It makes Plan 9 from Outer Space might as well be There Will Be Blood. This film just makes elevates every other film. I hate
it's
that
rock
I'm
bottom,
saying
dude. It's rock bottom.
It is so rock bottom. Yeah. I hate that I'm saying this because we've talked about it. Every single person in this film, we rate them. We rate them as good people. And this shows you the nightmare of Hollywood. This shows you the nightmare of what film can turn into if it's not handled right or if it's handled by people who just don't care. I gave this a 0.5. I know that Umba gave it a 0, but I still feel like, it got made. So, finally, it got off the editing wheel. Great. But I'm giving it 0.5 because I am never, ever going to watch this again. And I can't recommend this like The Room. I can't recommend this like a trauma film. It kind of needs to be put in a box and put somewhere else. And hopefully the director's cut will come out and I will change my mind completely. But I don't think it ever will. So I'm going to give it 0.5 random Jewish weddings that gets put upon you just because some grandfather won't accept a normal wedding or even a registry. And it has to happen in the middle of a park with loads of people just kind of staring at you. And none of them are your family anyway. So who cares?
We made a case for this movie. And now it's time to bury that case.
Yes.
But you should watch it. And on that note, this was Umba.
This is Steve.
This is Ricky.
And we're still laughing.
Don't listen to him. Don't watch it. It's not worth it.
Don't do it.
Tiptoe through the window, by the window, that is where I'll become. Tiptoe through the tulips with me. Through the tulips.